Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 30 shopping days left until Christmas, and you know what that means. It means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. My name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight are my co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Choo-choo, motherfucker.
Choo-choo-choo-choo. John, are you ready for Turkey Day?
Oh, no. I'm not. I didn't get any turkeys.
Oh, that's so sad. Especially on this auspicious occasion of Turkey Day, Thanksgiving 2021.
Oh, that, okay. Okay, no, I thought you meant it was Turkey Day, like it was the day you had to collect all the turkeys. And I'm, like, way behind on that.
No, I meant, like, Turkish Independence Day.
Oh, okay.
And Mr. Bradford is here as well. Brad.
All aboard!
Now your kid's awake.
Yep.
I vacuumed while she was in bed. I think if she was going to wake up, she already
she would have done it. We'd have heard it by now.
The Polar Express is here to pick her up. The child abduction express is pulling into the station.
A one-way ticket to Child Endangerment City. Hi, everybody. Welcome to a very special episode of Christmas Creeps. This is our first annual T. Hanks Giving celebration, where we give thanks for the one and only Tom Hanks, whose film The Polar Express we will be discussing tonight on this, I guess, kickoff to Christmas season 2021. Thanksgiving Day is here, and, you know, I hope everybody's having a lovely time wherever you are in the world, and I cannot wait to talk about this so-called modern Christmas classic with two of my best friends. Gentle friends, how have you been doing so far this season?
I'm good. Turkey's in the oven. Or rather on the grill, because that's how we roll here at the Bradford family. Got a persimmon cobbler that I'm very excited about.
Ooh,
yeah, it's been and I honeyed some cranberries a couple weeks ago, so we'll see how those turn out as well. How about you all?
I have been put on deviled egg duty for the second year in a row, and if I do say so myself, my deviled eggs are amazing.
Would you say they're devilish?
They are indeed. They are to die for.
Ah.
Mr. Five, what about you?
Deviled eggs are basically like crystallized farts.
Yeah, I love them.
Ooh.
You're my enemy.
Okay.
I mean, you're both okay. Right. You're both correct. They're both very good, and they are like crystallized farts. I eat a boiled egg every day, and it's sometimes can be a little difficult to get down. Depends on how much stank that egg is working with, really.
Oh, listen, no. I'm a boy who takes pride in his deviled eggs, so I'm not going to disparage anyone who doesn't like them, but they are definitely for me. Annie Hoosen, hey, let's talk about, real quick, before we jump into the Polar Express.
No, it's Eddie Deason.
I'm sorry, I was not prepared for that. Wow. Yeah, we'll talk about that kettle of fish a little bit later.
Can check. Jonathan Five, what you working with?
Absolutely nothing. I am. I can't.
I understand.
I am dead inside, much like every character in this movie.
Devoid of life.
Yes.
Bradford, what about you?
I have a Hardywood gingerbread stout. I'm getting a little festive here today. It's an imperial milk stout with cinnamon, vanilla, ginger, and honey.
Well, hey, don't leave me out, because I don't have a can this week, but you know,
it's a can check
crack
in
a bottle
in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have?
I found Anchor Brewing's Merry Christmas Happy New Year 2021 brew.
Mm.
And apparently they do this, you know, once a year. They have a different kind of Christmas ale with special flavors, and this one, let's see here. This is the 47th annual Anchor Brewing Christmas Ale.
Whoa.
Wow, that is a very robust flavor.
Yeah? It's Christmas ale, like a spiced ale?
It's like a spiced Christmas ale. It's got notes of lots of spices, lots of, I could tell there's a little bit of cinnamon in it. There's a little bit of nutmeg. It's kind of sweet. It's very good.
Yeah, most Christmas beers tend to be sweet. Mine's pretty sweet. This is about as sweet as I'd ever want to go in a beer, honestly.
The label on this one is very very basic. All it says is our special ale with natural flavors.
Hey.
Not the best descriptor in the world, but you know, there you go. I endorse it.
There you go.
Okay, so enough of that mess. Enough of the food and the drink and the merrymaking.
Onto the other mess.
Onto the other mess. Let's get down to the brass tacks, the steel railroad spikes, if you will, of the Polar Express. Gentle friends, are you or were you familiar with the Polar Express?
I was familiar with the book, but I had never seen the movie.
Okay.
Came out in 2004, and I was fully in... I was a young teenage Bradford who was far too cool to ever be seen with this movie. And by cool, I mean I was absolutely lame, but in a different sort of way. So, no, I hadn't seen this.
That's entirely fair. No one would judge you for that. J-Man, what about you?
I was aware of the existence of the book in the movie, and that's about it.
Okay, that is also fair. I never read or had the book read to me as a child, but I definitely saw this movie in theaters. And because I was a very cool lad of 18 years old, I did see this in theaters with my mom.
See, you're a good son. You're good for you.
I try to be, you know?
Oh, that's very sweet. And I mean, absolutely no shade by that.
If I have... any nostalgia for this movie at all, it's that memory and that experience right there. The rest, I could kind of take or leave, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
But we'll dig into that, because this is a film that really digs those nostalgia hooks deep. And I think we're going to be surprised with where we wind up on this film, because, you know, I've lived with this for, God, nearly half of my life, and I've known how strange and the turns it takes. But you guys are seeing this fresh for the first time, and I was expecting you guys to outright absolutely hate it.
It's complicated. We'll get into it.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I think that's kind of this movie in a nutshell. It's complicated, and we'll get into it. It's not as cut and dry as I thought it was going
to
be.
Yeah, I was expecting this to be a really open and shut case. I wanted to be out of here in 25 minutes, but that's not going to happen tonight. But first things first, I guess we'll talk about the giant motion captured elephant in the room. You know, this came out in 2004. It was directed by Robert Zemeckis. This was the beginning of his turn into the beginning of his downfall into weird motion captured CG technology.
This was his Waterloo.
He did this. He did a Beowulf movie. He did another Christmas film we could talk about at some point, the Jim Carrey Christmas Carol adaptation, which frankly is not bad. It just looks like a migraine. But for the longest time, like this was Robert Zemeckis's like white whale, was perfecting this technology, and I don't know if he ever really did that.
So we had this. Mars Needs Moms came after this, correct?
It came out, yeah, 8 or 9 years later, and he wasn't like directly involved with it, but he is a producer on it.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought they came out very close to one another and both had that weird mocap situation going on.
Well, it was like, I think that was kind of the last of his little experiments with this.
Gotcha.
And in fitting fashion, that was the one where it lost the studio so much money that they broke the film down into its component CGI parts and sold them out to the highest bidder.
I did not know that.
Yes, like all the CGI elements got sold to different animation studios.
Like the 3D assets, right? Like trees and stuff.
Oh. Yeah, so that they could recoup their losses.
I never knew that. That's amazing. Oh, boy.
But this is the beginning of all of that. And we'll get into that. For better or for worse, it works for the film, because like I'm familiar enough with the book to know what like the artwork of the book. For the most part, it captures that artwork fairly well.
The scenery is fine, and like it does a good job of recapturing that. And most of the book is like scenery.
Yeah.
So it's just the faces, man. The faces are very unfortunate.
Yeah, it's everything that's not people is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
On the whole, yeah, it's one of those movies where the 3D animation had come so far up to that point, but there still was clearly a long way to go.
Yeah, I think I'll just put it on the table now. I was going to talk about it later, but I think more than anything, I think this was just a little bit too ambitious and a little bit before. Like, if they had waited 10 years for the technology to mature more and people get, you know, wait for people to get more familiar with doing artistic things with CGI, I think the movie would have been better for it in a big way.
I agree with that, but then also I feel like if they had waited, this would have fallen into the laps of somebody like Illumination or one of those other studios that just kind of carpet bombed the entire landscape with like talking animal movies that look cartoony and weird. And okay. We wouldn't get something that was trying to go from something more lifelike like this. You know, I
suppose I'm not talking about the market. I'm just talking about the technology.
Right. And my feeling on that is like the technology is probably there now, but I don't think the market for it is.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. But yeah, for I guess the plot to the Polar Express is fairly simple. I don't think we need to get into it too much, do we?
So I had a copy of, we have a copy of the book somewhere in the house, but I could not find it. I was just going to read the copy of our copy of it verbatim, but unfortunately I can't find it, and also we'd miss out on some very critical points, but it would have it would capture the broad strokes.
All right, well, let's just talk about this stupid ass movie. Okay, so we got a kid who's not named. He's just called Hero Kid, Hero Boy. He has a little sister, Sarah. He's beginning to doubt.
Sorry, couldn't resist.
The existence of Santa. He doesn't quite have a Pepe Silva board. He has a little file, though, a dossier on Santa, proving that the mall Santa ain't fucking real.
The hero dossier.
Yes. So then Christmas Eve, a train stops outside of his house, which there's no tracks out of his house. That's fun. Tom Hanks gets off the train, tells him to get on. It's the Polar Express. Why? It's the Polar Express, boy! He gets on. There's other kids on there, all in various levels of doubting or believing in Santa, basically. They go to the North Pole. There's a bunch of Uncharted 2-ass shenanigans going on that are...
Excuse me, John. I need to stop you right there because we found out just today. We have that backwards. There is not a bunch of Uncharted 2-ass shenanigans in this movie. Uncharted 2 has a bunch of the Polar Express of the game shenanigans in it.
Well, I'll take things as Nolan North in it over Eddie Deason.
yeah, that's fair.
Anyway, yeah, there's some like honestly pretty fun scenes and pretty fun shots in the train ride, and then when they get to the North Pole, there's just a bunch of shit with elves. Basically, it looks like Apocalypse Now at the end, except instead of Marlon Brando, it's Santa. And Santa decides to give out the first present of the year to Hero Boy, and he picks a sleigh bell. Because when he first gets there, he can't hear the sleigh bells ring. And that's the sign of believing, is if you can hear the sleigh bells ring. And then he finally manages to hear them. And then he goes back home, and he gets the sleigh bell. And it's basically just a very blatant attempt to tug at nostalgia. Like, even though this is a children's movie, this movie was very much... The target audience was the parents of the people taking their kids to see the movie. Much like with the original book, the target audience was not the children, it was the parents reading the book to their children.
And that's the sign of a great children's book, right? Because the kids aren't paying attention.
Yeah.
Oh no, there's a whole subgenre of schmaltzy children's books that are absolutely for the parents and not for the kids, let me tell you.
Oh, we've talked circles around that, I feel. On the show,
what is the worst offender? What is it? The I Will Always Love
that,
You,
that Love You Forever. Yeah,
yeah. Oh my goodness!
God damn it, Whitney Houston.
So one point that John brought up really early, like the kid gets on the train. There's a bunch of other kids who are presumably in a similar situation to him because the train appears to him because he's doubting the existence of Santa Claus. And he gets on the train, and he's a mopey little shit, like right off the bat. And he gets on the train and he meets all these other kids. All these other kids are super pumped and jazzed to be there. Like, they know what they're in for. And they're not mopey little shits. Why are they on the train? Are they all having the same crisis of faith? Or are they all just, did they all just, like, win the lucky ticket?
There's the only one other kid that is having a crisis of faith, really.
Well, that we meet.
That we meet, yeah. All the other kids are, yeah, super stoked, ready to roll.
Like, yeah, the kid, I can't get over the fact that his name is Hero Boy.
That's really his name in the credits?
Yes.
Oh my goodness, I thought you guys were just...
No.
Just having a fun time.
It's like, wow. They Live naming Roddy Piper's character Nada because he doesn't have a name.
Yeah, the Lonely Boy, he's credited as Lonely Boy, but we do find out that his name is Billy. And then Hero Boy's little sister, little Sarah, boy. Has it. Yes, most lonely boys.
Thank you.
Anyway, so we have Hero Boy, Hero Girl, Lonely Boy, and Know-It-All. Those are our four main characters on the train. We find out that Lonely Boy is named Billy, but other than that, these kids, that's what we get for him.
Yeah, and as far as like it's like faithfulness to the book, Know-It-All actually shows up in one page of the book, so they at least put the kid in there. And why they had him be Mandark, I will never understand.
That's an important thing to know about this movie, is one of the things they were able, for better or worse, to do with the complete like CGI of mocap is all of these child characters are played by the adults. Like, Know-It-All is not just voiced by Eddie Deason. Eddie Deason did the mocap for him. Tom Hanks did the mocap for Hero Boy. And
Conductor Man.
Yes. Tom Hanks plays like six or eight characters in the damn movie.
Didn't he also play Ghost Hobo?
Yes.
Tom Hanks plays the Conductor, the Ghost Hobo, Santa Claus, the Dad, and did the mocap for Hero Boy.
Okay.
So this is like Tom Hanks of the movie.
Yeah, I swear his fucking...
Why didn't they just mocap the kid for Hero Boy? I don't understand.
I swear his fucking Santa voice sounds like Buffalo Bill from Goddamn Silence of the Lambs.
Let's put the lotion on the skin right here. God, I'm sorry.
It puts the stocking on the chimney.
It fixes the hole in its pocket.
Yeah, but like basically they had these adults on like oversized sets. To what end? You can't recognize them doing this. The voice is someone else. It's the same thing with Mars Needs Bombs. Like, the main character in that was originally mocapped and voiced by Seth Green. They're like, wait, Seth Green doesn't sound like a kid, so they got some random kid voice. So then what the fuck was the point of having Seth Green show up instead of, like, Andy Serkis or some shit, you know?
I mean, I presume it's because, like, people know who Seth Green is so they could put his name on the poster. But they didn't put his name on the poster, did they?
Yeah, that's probably the biggest problem with this performance capture, whatever the hell Zemeckis called it, is, like, why are you doing this? You don't need to get famous actors to do your fucking mocap other than just to prove that you can, I guess. Like, is it just like part of your flex to just throw ping pong balls at Tom Hanks, basically?
I mean, I guess so.
I want to issue a correction. The biggest problem is not that. The biggest problem is that Eddie Deason is in this film.
The most unfortunate sort of turn of history is that Eddie Deason is in this film. But the one we didn't even talk about is that Billy, the Lonely Boy, was mocapped by Peter Scolari, who I think Tom Hanks got him in there as a personal favor to him, because they were both on a sitcom in the 80s together, bosom buddies. So, and Peter Scolari just passed away. So this is, you know, we're giving thanks to Tom Hanks, but also this is an RIP Peter Scolari episode. But yeah, the motion capture. Is it also like it's got a long way to go, because like what the kids running, any scene where the kids have to run is extremely awkward to me, because they're constantly stumbling. And I think it's because it's adults wearing motion capture suits constantly stumbling.
You know, you remember, just to give people an idea, if you're not familiar with this film and you don't want to go view it, which I don't blame you. You remember those Taiwanese news videos that were really popular maybe like 10 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's about like that, mm-hmm. basically. Or it has a very, we were saying, it has a very like PS3 era in-engine cutscene feel to it.
Yes, it does. It really does.
Very much so.
And if we're talking about nostalgia, like that's something that I never expected to get hit by watching this now, is feeling nostalgic over PS3 cutscenes. in the year of our Lord 2021.
Yeah, I mean,
it was certainly a time.
The main thing this has taught me is that, like, a couple of years ago, I bought Uncharted The Lost Legacy on a PlayStation holiday sale. I haven't played it yet, so I need to go do that.
Yeah.
So the main,
thank
the
you,
main,
Polar Express.
Thank you, Polar Express, for reminding us that we bought video games.
Let's hear it for video games.
Hey, video games have had a good run, everybody. Some of the greats have been video games.
Yeah, all right.
But no, the lion's share of the film takes place on the train from, you know, going from, was it Grand Rapids, Michigan to the North Pole. And it, you know, the movie hits kind of the points of the book pretty well. You know, there's a scene where the train rides by a pack of wolves. And there's like a long tracking shot that, you know, a CG computer animated movie can do, where it follows the flight path of a golden ticket further than you could possibly do in live action, up to and including watching a baby bird swallow and then regurgitate it.
They were very much flexing with that, I think. And at least they thought.
I mean, it was fun. It was impressive. It didn't look too bad. I will say, if this had been even today, a live action movie just with like CG added to it, it would have still looked fucking worse than this.
I think right.
Like,
I have a question for you, Joe.
Okay.
Did this movie come out in 3D? Because it seemed like there were a lot of like 3D movie money shots, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Where, like, stuff is like coming towards the camera. I just didn't know if this got a 3D release, because I think this was a little bit before 3D was in vogue. Remember the time when, like, literally any movie that wasn't like an art house movie or Oscar bait had a 3D version?
Yeah, I do. It was like right around the time Avatar came out, and then everything for the next 5 to 10 years was had a 3D version.
That was a pain in the ass.
It was a real headache and nightmare. Wikipedia says there was an IMAX 3D version. So I think they knew even then, like, yeah, this is going to be a big 3D event. Also, I'm looking here on Wikipedia, right under the IMAX 3D comment. Box office. The film opened at number 2 behind The Incredibles. Incredibles opened the same weekend.
That just goes to show.
I even remember at the time, like, reading a film critic's, like, top 10 of the year. And at one of the numbers, I think it was number 10, he put The Polar Express and The Incredibles in there as a tie at number 10.
No.
At the time, his reasoning, fuck you. No, let me finish. At the time,
I know.
His reasoning was like, well, you know, they're both, you know, such great, huge leaps forward in animation, and we have to recognize that. And at the time, I remember thinking, like, yeah, I guess you're right. But, you know, in 2021, looking back at it, you might have been smoking crack, my dude, because no, ain't no way.
I mean, I get where he was probably trying to go with it, but come on.
Yeah, the idea in theory, I suppose, but like, no, because, yeah, sure, this might have been a huge leap forward at the time for animation, but the rest of the film is not just animation.
Yeah.
It's an awkward, kind of trippy children's nightmare about the North Pole.
Yeah, it's a little creepy, but not enough. It just will, like, dip into weird, like, the engineer and the steamer are just the most, like, fucking cartoon-ass characters. They don't fit in the rest of the movie at all. It's very strange.
They look like they belong in, like, a Final Fantasy IX or something.
Yeah.
It's weird. And then we also have, like, a weird abandoned gross puppet room for, like, 25 seconds. Because why not?
Yeah, like, what? Let's do Five Nights at Santa's. Why not?
It is so out of left field. I don't understand why they put it in, because it wasn't in the original book. And it's only in there for 25 seconds. I have to think that this was going to be a more fleshed out part of the movie. And they had already created the assets, so they felt obligated to put at least some of it in the movie.
Well, like, functionally, like, it's in there because you have to have that moment where the kid, like, still has his doubts about Santa Claus, and he's tormented by a marionette of Ebenezer Scrooge.
I guess.
But still, like, it's very off-putting. And you could have had that same conversation with another kid on the train, because isn't that why all the kids are on the train?
Yeah.
To have that conversation.
We hadn't mentioned that there's musical numbers.
There's a handful of them, yeah.
There's the hot chocolate number, which is a thing that happens. This is the moment when I realized, like, I got what they were trying to do, but it just, the technology, like, wasn't there, and the animation just wasn't there. Like, was in different hands or with more technology, this could have been fun, but it was just creepy and bad.
It was you know? Fucking Gap commercial.
A Gap commercial? There was a product placement for the Gap in it?
No. He's saying this was one of those Gap commercials they had in the late 90s where they were trying really hard to get people into, like, the swing revival.
Oh.
They were dancing the Charleston to sell Gap clothes and stuff. Like, this
they were falling into the Gap.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, like, right. falling into what was the name of the ravine they were, that the train goes into? Like Caveman's Glitter, Gulch.
Galt's Gulch or something gulch. Like that.
Galt's Gulch. The train stops dead and Tom Hanks has to explain something to the children for 6.5 hours.
Now we gotta talk, well, you mentioned that, so we have to mention the best character in the movie, which is Ghost Hobo.
I thought you were gonna say the caribou.
Please, it's Ghost Hobo.
Oh, it's Ghost Hobo. Hands down.
Hands down. Played by one Tom Hanks, just like half the people in this movie. A really weird thing happens, which I don't remember being in the book. So Hero Girl, or is it Hero Girl?
Yes,
sure.
Hero Girl loses her ticket. Well, she leaves it on the seat when she's going to give hot chocolate to Los Lonely Boy. And Hero Boy sees the ticket, and he decides to go give it to her as if she won't come back to her seat when she's done. Anyways, kid logic.
Well, conductor Tom Hanks will definitely throw her off the train if he catches her without her ticket.
Even though he's literally standing there with her to deliver the hot chocolate and presumably bring her back to her seat. But kid logic. So he tries to go give her the ticket, and the ticket blows away, and then we have that big log sequence where it does a bunch of stuff and then comes back into the train. And then he tries to get the ticket. He gets the ticket, but the conductor... See, this is another part. I know pointing out plot holes in movies is dumb and bad, but the conductor, like, takes her to the front of the train, but he does it by taking her on the roof.
Yeah, he does.
Because... Even though he has a full itinerary of who, or like a full list of who's supposed to be on the train. I don't know, man. Anyways, point is Hero Boy gets on the top of the train, and who is up there? A hobo making coffee by the fireside. And it's, this movie gets 120% cooler for about 10 minutes.
Hobo Tom Hanks sitting there playing a hurdy-gurdy, washing his socks in a coffee pot.
It's so good. It's the best part of this movie. So we have a bunch of Uncharted stuff that happens, as John mentioned. We go skiing on the top of the train. He calls him kid a bunch. It's really good. It's better than this movie deserves.
And he tries to teach him a lesson about, you know, believing in magical things. And then he disappears in a puff of smoke or snow, whichever it is out here. And Hobo Tom Hanks, Hobo Man, is like, he's the spirit of Christmas or something, right? But he's symbolic.
I think so, yeah.
The one problem with that is that when the scene with the tickets flying around, one of the places it flies on is it runs into the snoring hobo who's hanging from the bottom of the train at the time. It's like, it kind of is a weird choice to have the hobo show up and be presented as like a real character and like as in a real person, you know, and then it's revealed like, oh, he gets turned into snow. It's strange.
That he has a corporeal form and then doesn't.
Yes.
Basically, I suppose. I think if he's not a spirit of Christmas, it's supposed to be kind of just like a knowing wink and nod back to like the age when people actually told ghost stories at Christmas, and Christmas actually had like an element of spookiness about it, which was a cool thing that I think should be brought back a little bit.
And the conductor even kind of plays into that, because he's telling the kids the story about, like, you know, one time I was on top of the train and I slipped off, but something caught me and I didn't fall off the train. And they're like, someone caught you? He's like, or something.
We got to bring back Spooky Christmas.
Yeah, we should. Home for the Holidays 24/7.
Hashtag bring back spooky Christmas.
Put the spook back in Christmas.
Yes.
I fully endorse this. But yeah, like the ride to the North Pole is remarkably perilous for a children's film. This kid nearly dies like 15 times, all in just a trip to see Santa Claus. And it's very stressful.
Yes.
And I imagine if I was a child, I would find it very stressful, but it's...
Yeah, I was almost going to have our daughter watch this with me, and I'm glad I didn't, because there's some nightmare stuff in here.
Like yeah, puppets. I don't know if she's ready for that.
And the weird faces.
And the weird, weird faces.
And Steven Tyler. Ugh.
Oh, we haven't, we're not even close to Steven Tyler yet. But I have a question at this point. So, you know, we mentioned that, you know, this isn't really a film for children. This is a film for the parents of the children who have had that book read to them. But like a Christmas film like this that begins by planting the seed of doubt that Santa Claus does not exist.
Yeah, even, also that.
Even if it does go on to like confirm, like, oh, yeah, of course he does. What kind of a move is that? I don't know. And I'm not a parent, so I'm not equipped to say, but that seems strange to me.
It started me actually thinking last night about how to approach all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. But I don't know. It'd be if I choose to go the SC route, I don't know how big of a fan I would be of the beginning? Question mark? I don't know. Like, if you're an older kid, sure, whatever, I get it. But, like, a 5-year-old or a 4-year-old, I don't know, man. Whatever. Because at the end, nobody else can hear the bell except him.
That's true. I mean, he had a very, very special, very particular experience with Santa Claus, and that's for him. That's not for anybody else.
That also brings up an interesting question. Everybody that knows about Santa, I guess, ends up doubting it unless they just get it straight up told to them at some point.
Yeah.
So does this train appear for everybody, or is it only for special kids who have doubts Christmas Eve?
That's a good question. Because
that's a lot of kids.
Yeah, and the kids that we see get to the Polar Express, get to the North Pole, there's only about like what, 10 or 15 of them. So this is
if that.
Yeah. So
are they the chosen ones?
Maybe Santa Claus just has a very special connection with the people of Grand Rapids, Michigan?
Cuz two of the kids are from Grand Rapids at least.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Santa Claus has a deal with what's the name of the department store that they go by in the beginning of this?
Henkel's or something like that. That's the confectionery from Grand Budapest Hotel, isn't it?
That's Mendel's.
Mendel's, that's right. It starts with an H. I don't remember what the actual name
it's
is.
It's a real thing in Michigan. In Grand Rapids, yeah, it's like a real like local. It's like a local version, like Macy's or Gimbel's or whatever. You know, one of those type right. thing that's named after a guy whose name is escaping me because it's some fucking Deutsch as hell name.
We're just gonna call it Higbee's.
Yes, it's Higbee's.
it's Higbee's.
Maybe there's a multiverse thing going on where every town gets a train.
Maybe.
I mean, so, Santa's magic, so why not? Whatever.
You know, that would explain how Santa Claus can do this all in one night. Every town gets their own Santa Claus.
Now you're on to something.
You know, this is the North Pole of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Maybe the North Pole of, you know, Santa Fe, New Mexico looks completely different. Maybe the North Pole of, hell, I don't know, Orlando, Florida is just Disney World. I don't know these things.
Now we're cooking with gas, and I'm surprised a movie hasn't explored this angle. Because we have all the paramilitary stuff going on.
Right.
All the heavy industrial operations. We haven't really explored a multiverse sort of situation.
Well, Marvel's getting ready to crack that, so I'm sure we'll get that movie coming any day now.
God. Yeah.
I'm sorry to have to bring Marvel into the conversation, but it's true. You know, they're doing the multiverse thing right now, and... there's got to be, there has to have been a story where, like, one, you know, Earth 616 of Santa Claus meets Earth 220 Santa Claus. I don't know. I don't know the numbers and shit.
Stop it. I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about this anymore. I regret bringing it up.
This one's on you, bud.
I know.
So the kids get to the North Pole, and it is devoid of life. I mean, there are no people around at all. But that's because the elves are congregating in the town square. But that does not stop the film from spending the next 20 minutes having these three kids wander around an empty factory in the middle of the night. And it's genuinely kind of creepy.
I liked this a little bit. It was nice.
This was some of my favorite stuff in the movie, to be honest. Because I like that it was a little bit creepy, and it seemed to be doing it on purpose.
See? I gotta bring back Spooky Christmas. I'm not talking about full-on Jack Frost, Silent Night, Deadly Night stuff. I'm talking about this. Just make it a little spooky.
Yeah, like Andy Williams singing about scary ghost stories. Let's talk about some scary ghost stories.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, just like the little detail that I really appreciated was, I mean, all the elves are downtown, and in their absence, the PA system is just playing these very tinny old Christmas carols, Christmas songs on a radio.
Yeah, I mean,
it's disturbing.
It's Bioshock.
It's Bioshock. I hate to keep bringing this back to video games, but it's literally Bioshock.
Before Bioshock.
All right, so let's go over this real quick. So, the music.
Okay. It's
Alan Silvestri.
Yes. Yes.
Also did Reindeer Games. And also did Mouse Hunt, which had its music used in what fucking thing? Was it Four Christmases? Some fucking thing we watched just used a shitload of music from other movies, like Mouse Hunt and Cheaper by the Dozen and shit like that.
Man. Hey, wait.
Have we ever talked about Mouse Hunt on this podcast?
Yeah, I believe we have.
About how I was very excited about it as a small child and had essentially dragged my dad to the theater to watch it. I couldn't tell you anything else about Mouse Hunt other than a scene where there's like a gajillion mouse traps. But let me tell you, 7-year-old Bradford was very excited about Mouse Hunt.
I'll bet so.
But actually, let me see what year that came out.
But again, like, John, are you saying what I think you're saying?
Does it count?
Do we have to induct Alan Silvestri into the Formula One Club or the Triple Threat Club?
I mean, does it count? He's not there, but he's making the noises.
Yeah, I mean, you're hearing his music, but if we include him, we have to include like every other musician, don't we? I mean, by that logic, Darlene Love would already be in the Triple Threat Club. Hell, the Formula One Club.
Here's what I'll say. Here's going to be our official stance. Okay. Alan Silvestri, I'm fucking watching you.
John's making a list, and he's checking it twice. He's not going to count the film where they hunt mice.
Yeah, that came out when I was 9, actually, but still, point stands. Very excited to go see Mouse Hunt. Maybe I'll revisit it. Maybe it's a good movie, I don't know.
Maybe we have to do a special episode about it sometime.
Have my dad on.
Fred Claus, that's the one.
I remember we talked about that, yeah. But yes, so like, what do y'all make of the weird factory scene at the North Pole?
Again, it was like some fun visuals. What's the best way to put this? You could have put those visuals just about anything though, and they'd be fun, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, like that scene did not have to be in the Polar Express.
Yeah. So we have to talk about the Steven Tyler scene though, because it is just so fucking. What the fuck is going on here?
Okay, last thing we do before we get to that. Did it strike either of you as odd when we see the elves like conducting one last check over one last kid, and you see the kid on the video screen, and it's just a live action shot of a kid saying he didn't do it? Whatever that thing was.
Was that live action or was that the CGI?
That was a real ass kid on that TV.
All the kids on those TVs were real.
Yeah.
It was really a little creepy. I don't know if they meant that to be creepy. But it was.
I mean, that's like...
for a different reason.
Creepy by accident. Like, that's like the Santa Claus surveillance state at work. Like, they actually watch real kids. But yeah, the kids make their way to the town square for Santa's big reveal at the end. And after Santa Claus picks the hero kid and gives him what he wants for Christmas, which is a bell off the sleigh, Santa flies off into the air, and all the elves celebrate as a rock band starts to play, and that rock band is Aerosmith, and we have to see a CGI Steven Tyler's face superimposed onto an elf body.
Oh, that's why it was so disgusting and off-putting.
Because it was literally Steven Tyler of Aerosmith.
Every part of the scene was so goddamn weird. Suddenly, elf Steven Tyler shows up, and then actually, like, lady elves show up, which hadn't been in the crowd before at all. No, it was just a bunch of fucking dudes.
No, this like, massive zoom out. You see all the elves dancing, and it's, like, all that male, the guy elves and the girl elves dancing, doing swing dancing again to Aerosmith.
And maybe this is one of those things where, in other situations, I'd be like, the problem is me noticing it. But here I'm going to say, it's like, they're the ones who fucking animated it. Like, there are just several just fucking upskirt shots of these goddamn CGI elves while they're swing dancing. And it's like, okay, you took the time to fucking animate that in this children's movie?
Yeah, if this was a live action film, like, okay, things happen, I get it. But they did this on purpose. Someone had to animate them.
Yes, they put these fucking cartoon elves in, like, stockings with garter belts and had them do swing dancing. Like, this was a conscious choice some fucking animator made.
And it got greenlit, too. Ship it. It already got rendered. We don't have time to fix it. Just ship it. Harold.
Not getting paid enough for this, damn it.
Let's talk about, everyone kind of knows about, let's talk about though just the general animation of the characters.
Sure.
People call, like, Uncanny Valley, yeah, pretty much true. It's not as bad as it's really made out to be, but it's pretty damn close. Like, a lot of the characters have dead eyes, kind of. All of the ears look really fucking bad. I want to say that. Like, they look like fucking, like, cinnamon rolls.
And then the mouths are, like, very wide and plasticky.
Yeah, and, like, all of the kids' faces, they look like kind of like they're, like, scrunched up and stretched. Yeah, like, it looks like all the kids are just going like the entire time they're on screen, basically.
And any time a character has to, like, dart their eyes back and forth, like, they don't quite animate it going far enough, so it's like nobody cares about anything they're looking at in this film. Like, the animation on the eyes alone is just wrong, and
yeah, there's a lot of, like,
incorrect
dead apathetic looking stares.
Yeah,
kind of. Yes.
That's the real downfall is it's all in the eyes. Those dead, lifeless, devoid of life eyes.
Devoid of life. We're going to keep coming back to this.
I do love that detail, because, like, the kids looking at this, the start of the film, the kids looking up, you know, the North Pole, and can anybody live there? And it's this long dramatic, like, zoom out where he sees in the dictionary the words devoid of life. Like, there was supposed to be a picture there, but instead they just said, nah, we don't have time for this. Just write devoid of life.
So I do want to talk about things that went well in this movie, though. Like, the scene with the ticket, that was pretty damn good. You couldn't have done that and made it look halfway good without just having it be animated. Like, it looked pretty good. The part where the train basically turned into a roller coaster ride, it looked kind of dated in terms of being, like, 2004 graphics, but, like, it still looked pretty good and looked fun. Anything they're doing other than the actual human characters turned out pretty okay.
Tom Hanks did a good job. Good job, Tom Hanks.
Except I think for Santa. I was going to say the conductor. I feel like the conductor is constantly yelling at these children like he doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, the conductor is
that's the best part. The conductor hates it's good.
Yeah, the conductor is total, like, Turner and Hooch era Tom Hanks.
Yeah, it's good, and man, what a feeling when they're about to leave the North Pole, he looks at his pocket watch, and his pocket watch says, still could be late. What a mood. Like, the inside of my brain.
The thing that I keep coming back to is the beginning when he meets the kid. What is this? And the conductor just yells at him, why, it's the Polar Express! And it feels like the end of that sentence is, you fucking idiot.
Dumbo.
You big dum-dum. Where does it go? Why, the North Pole, of course! Stupid!
Don't you know about this? Every kid knows about the Polar Express.
Didn't you read the book?
Yeah.
So overall, it's like some people have mentioned some of the reviews, kind of comparing it a little bit to Twilight Zone, I guess, in just the sense that this movie does kind of have like a weird, creepy dream logic to it. It's not too creepy, though. It's not too weird, but it's just a little bit off. And that probably doesn't help with the characters feeling just a little bit off. A lot of things in the movie kind of add up to just be just enough off to where it's just kind of like, it's hard to get too into it at times, because then as soon as you do, something comes along to just fucking wreck it, basically. Where it's either like a jarring change of pace or just a character looking fucking weird.
Yeah, because in the space of like 5 minutes, you go from like a thrilling action scene that's basically a roller coaster ride to three kids singing about how magical Christmas is to the utter wonder of like seeing the North Pole itself. And it's an emotional roller coaster ride, if nothing else. And this movie goes, I think, in too many directions. Like, the tone constantly shifts in ways that are jarring.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of this is, I mean, Brad, you could say it's from the book. The book is not that, it's a picture book.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as I seem to recall, a lot of the pages don't even have any text.
Yeah, it won like
probably, it's just the train traveling.
Probably the Newbery Award, is that the illustration one?
Yes, I believe so.
The plot in the book, the writing is very, you know, simple and childlike, but it's very like, I got on the train and then they gave us hot chocolate and then we rode through the woods and then we went to on top of a mountain and now we're at the North Pole. It's like beat, 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 beat. And then this movie has to stretch that out to a 90-minute experience, and they have to add complications and add movie things to it to make it a movie. And those movie things are the things that either make the film sink or swim. Which include the songs and the action scenes and all that other stuff.
For what it's worth, that's Caldecott, not Newbery. Newbery is the other one.
Okay.
There you go. Caldecott Metal. That's right.
We've talked about it kind of a bit too. We can talk about the entire, Zemeckis basically invented an entire process for this. And
right.
And he used it in what? The Christmas Carol, the Jim Carrey one, where Jim Carrey played like six characters. Beowulf, where, I mean, I watched Beowulf actually, back in theaters, I think, because it was like the only movie playing that had people we recognized in it. It was when I lived in Germany and we just had a hair up our ass to go to the movies, and I was like, what the fuck, Beowulf, why not, you know? And
back in those days when you just go and see whatever.
Yeah, that's how I also saw fucking Fool's Gold and Iron Man, for that matter. It was like, fuck it, the movie theater's right there.
Yeah.
And the only person I could even recognize as a person was Angelina Jolie, just because, like, oh, that's Angelina Jolie's face, I know what her face looks like.
Yeah.
And then Marzini's mom, like you said, was just a fucking disaster on several fronts, not just from looking kind of goofy and weird and shitty, but also just having the what the fuck ever plot, you know?
Just the weird retrograde, like, sexual politics and just, yeah, that in general.
Do you think, how much of an influence do you think this had on Avatar? Because that's like the real big, like, we animated a bunch of bullshit one that actually made a lot of money somehow.
I think that's a pretty solid comparison. I think this movie had to walk so that Avatar could run, for sure.
And
yeah,
it's still, Avatar is still baffling to me. Like, it came and went just as hard as it came, basically. Like, I mean, yeah, you can talk about how much money Avatar made, but it's just like, at the end of the day, there's not a fucking place on Reddit to get a bunch of really funny jokes called Avatar memes, like there is prequel memes, you know?
I mean, I even remember when Avatar came out, like a year later, they re-released it in theaters and basically nobody went because, well, we all saw it the first time. What are we supposed to do? See it again? And that's like where its cultural footprint kind of ended. And I mean, but you compare the two today, you know, Avatar has a whole, you know, theme park section at Disney World, the Polar Express, you know, places all over the country, probably all over the world, even do like Polar Express train rides for kids.
And even still, the Avatar thing feels like again, like, they're just trying to make fetch happen, basically.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, that theme park land is Disney hedging its best for whenever the hell James Cameron finishes Avatar 2. That's exactly what that is.
I mean,
the Polar Express, like, you can't do that again, you know? You can go remake his other books. You can go do Jumanji. You can do
Zathura.
Zathura, yeah. But you can't, like, do Polar Express Part 2.
The quickening. Guys, I regret to inform you that the Polar Express actually has a lot of text. So I was dead wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you like to grace us with a little bit of that?
Well, the opening of it is verbatim. The narrator actually says, the first page. But I can hit you with a little bit of it, and you just tell me when to stop. How about that?
Okay.
All right. On Christmas Eve, many years ago, I lay quietly in my bed. I did not rustle the sheets. I breathed slowly and silently. I was listening for a sound. A sound a friend had told me I'd never hear. The ringing bells of Santa's sleigh. There is no Santa, my friend had insisted, but I knew he was wrong. Late that night, I did hear sounds, though not of ringing bells. From outside came the sounds of hissing steam and squeaking metal. I looked through my window and saw a train standing perfectly still in front of my house. It was wrapped in an apron of steam. Snowflakes fell lightly around it. A conductor stood at the open door of one of the cars. He took a large pocket watch from his vest, then looked up at my window. I put on my slippers and robe. I tiptoed downstairs and out the door. All aboard, the conductor cried out. I ran up to him. Well, he said, are you coming? Where? I asked. Why, to the North Pole, of course, was his answer. This is the Polar Express. I took his outstretched hand and he pulled me aboard.
Okay, now see, that took you about one whole minute.
Yes.
And I feel like in the film that they stretched that out to about 10 minutes.
Oh, there's a lot of padding in this movie.
There's a ton of padding. But some of it's necessary. I get that you want to turn this into a movie. You're going to have to do some padding. My question is more, how much is too much?
This could have been a tight 80, tight 70. There's some fat on this film that maybe shouldn't be there. I don't know.
I mean, this could have been an animated TV special.
Well, for certain, and it probably would have been more fondly remembered.
Oh, yeah, but like, we don't do animated TV specials anymore, is the thing. Like, that doesn't exist anymore.
Yes.
And someone's out there is going to tell me, like, well, actually, we had these and this and that. No, like, I guess it had to be a feature film, because otherwise it wouldn't get made. And yeah. So at that point, it kind of just feels craven, like they made it for money. And
yeah,
they certainly did, didn't they?
I mean, I think something that might be telling is that all of the awards it was nominated for were for sound.
I think that's fitting.
Yeah. That makes sense.
It got nominated Academy Awards for Best Sound Editing, Best Sound Mixing, and Best Original Song for that James Brolin or Josh Brolin or
no. We're not doing, we're not, no.
Grover, whoever the fuck it was, song.
Grover House. No.
You guys remember when Josh Brolin sang the theme song for the Polar Express? Now I have to look up what beat the Polar Express in all those awards. And let's see. Sound editing? Oh, it was The Incredibles. Sound mixing? Oh, it was the Ray Charles biopic. That's an, okay. That's a left field thing. Let's see.
Original song.
It got beat by the theme song for the Motorcycle Diaries. Okay, fine. A good song probably won that award on purpose. The Polar Express got shut out of the Oscars that year. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, what a shame. What a shame. Got robbed. I say as sarcastically as possible.
It just couldn't compete with the Ray Charles biopic, which I say that sarcastically. That's actually a pretty good movie. I'm not going to throw any shade to Ray Charles. Polar Express is what it is. It's fine. So let's jump over to the crankometer where we rate this sucker and then move about our holiday season. The crankometer is our patented XY-axis for rating Christmas movies. The X-axis is the Christmas quotient, how Christmassy the film is. And the Y-axis is the quality quotient, how good the film is. So, gentle friends, the Polar Express, how Christmassy?
It's pretty Christmassy.
I mean, does this warrant a natural five? Can we find any excuse to deduct points?
I mean, it's all about Christmas. At its very basest, corest, whatever.
It's all right? about, yeah, I mean, it's all about Christmas and, like, the nostalgia therein, you know?
Yeah.
One thing I'll say is it, the point of the movie is basically about the magic of believing in Santa. It's that very specific aspect of Christmas. It doesn't really get into much of anything else along with it, for what that's worth.
Right. They really don't spend any time even, like, hinting at, you know, the more religious side of the holiday, other than, you know, the existence of ghosts.
Yeah, I mean, or even, like, just the kind of, like, what we talked before, like, family togetherness, that type of thing, or, like, just being with friends, family, people you want to be around. It's just all about believing in Santa, because that's totally where your toys come from.
Yeah.
So maybe a four?
I feel more comfortable with a four than a five, yeah.
Yeah, because it's, if we, to start digging into that a little bit, it starts to feel a little cynical. So yeah, I'm okay with a four.
A four is what I had originally.
I do feel that any movie or anything where the moral is believing in Santa is kind of heartless.
Because I mean, all you're doing is delaying the inevitable.
Yeah.
If you have an agenda there, you
Look,
know.
If we want to talk about dubious CGI and believing in Santa, let's just go back to Rhapsody Street Kids.
Believe in Santa. Oh gosh, we've come full circle, because that was our first episode of 2021, if I recall.
And the CGI has only advanced so much in the 2 years since Rhapsody Street Kids.
Oh right, because that was really,
that was 2002. This is,
oh yeah, we did have adults inexplicably playing children in that movie too.
Yeah, we did, and an inexplicably talented voice cast in an otherwise, well, I mean, this had a lot larger budget and was well animated.
But you know what this didn't have?
But what?
Didn't have Deborah Wilson spewing gibberish.
Christmas.
Okay, well, let's hop over to the Y-axis. How good did we think this actually was? And I'm going to let you guys take the floor, because my feeling is very conflicted.
Let me put this out before I put out a number. I went into this expecting this to be very, very bad and to dislike it a lot. And I did not dislike it nearly as much as I thought I would.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's good, but I'm saying it exceeded my very low expectations of it. Because you would always, if you haven't seen this movie, but you're on the internet or whatever, you hear about, like, how bad this movie is, how bad the CGI is, all that stuff.
It certainly has a reputation, yeah.
It has a reputation, but there are some bright spots. I actually kind of enjoyed watching it for the most part, other than when it got too schmaltzy. Johnny Five, you wanna say your part before we get into the numbers?
Yeah, I wanna say the reputation is about 60% earned. I'll say that.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair.
It
does have, the people animations are pretty bad. There is a lot of, like, yeah, like you said, look at the faculty animations, like the fucking hubcap and the marbles, like anything in kids' room, that just really feels like a tech demo of physics engine version one, basically, of just like, look, you can go knock down shit. Like, remember the first demos for, like, we had demos for just like Havoc physics engine, basically, and it was just like you could watch a skeleton fall down the stairs and then pick the skeleton up and drop it down the stairs and it falls differently, you know.
Oh yeah, I remember when Red Faction came out, and it was amazing when you can, like, blow a hole through a wall and the debris would scatter. Like, that was incredible technology. That was what, 2001?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
I guess the point I'm making with that is there are a lot of things in here that feel like they're just basically showing off their toys, more or less, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's like, it's padding. Like you said, this movie is a little over 90 minutes long. It doesn't have 90 minutes worth of content.
Yeah.
It definitely is Robert Zemeckis saying, look what I can do with this technology. And that's about all he had in him with this one. Because, yeah, like, it's a story that does not need 90 minutes to be told. And the middle portions of it that we enjoyed were all the tech demo stuff.
Yes.
And the schmaltzy Christmas, like, nostalgia stuff, all of that, I think, at least for the three of us, just rings hollow because we're, like, jaded adult millennials who see the world burning down all around us. I don't know. I'm not as nostalgic for this as I think it wants me to be.
Yeah. I will give it this, though. I think there's not really much like it out there, and I don't think there ever will be at least a commercial movie. Because now, as you said, when we were talking earlier about, you know, give it 10 years, no, we'd have a lot more comedy, a lot more pop music and people mugging for the camera and making DreamWorks face and stuff like that. I think there's something to be said that this is crystallized in amber and it's kind of its own thing, for better and for worse.
This was very much just the brainchild of two people, Bob Zemeckis and Tom Hanks. Originally, Tom Hanks was going to play every character until they just realized this is going to take forever.
They realized that's a very bad idea and we should not do that.
I mean, there's no reason you couldn't have Tom Hanks mocap every single character, other than just would take too damn long, and Tom Hanks was like, this is tiring, I don't want to do it.
Yeah. So I give it a plus one for the fact that it's kind of its own thing, and I don't know that there's much I can compare it to. Like I said, for better and for worse. I'll give it a plus two for its creepiness, intentional or otherwise. It gets negative 1 point for Eddie Deason, just existing. And it gets negative 3 for the terrible Josh Groban song. I hate it so much. Oh. I didn't know it was tied to this movie. It's the worst Christmas song. Fight me.
Is it better or worse than the Christmas song from Grinch 2000?
Where Are You Christmas?
Yes. Why Can't I Find You?
It is absolutely worse than that. Come on.
I don't know, bud.
Come on. To give you a little bit of context, I had no idea that this song was tied to this movie until, like, it's the leitmotif for this movie is the melody to that song.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
And I didn't realize it until 5 minutes into this movie, and it soured me on the entire experience, because I knew at the end with the credits that schmaltzy, terrible song was going to come on. I hadn't heard this song until maybe a couple of years ago. You know how you can go on, like, Spotify or Apple Music and just hit, okay, play me Christmas music,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This stupid song that I hate so much, I had never heard it until maybe 2 or 3 years ago. It started coming up, and it's just the worst. I hate it. It makes me want to vomit. It's so bad.
So does this song actually get, like, airplay?
Oh, yeah. I've heard it on the radio. Yes.
Okay, I didn't know if it got terrestrial play, but it certainly is in, like, all of the internet Christmas music playlists that I've queued the last couple of years.
Like
I immediately skip it if I'm anywhere near the controls.
Like our local Light FM station has started playing Christmas music already, and I've heard it at least 2 or 3 times so far.
Oh god.
I mean it's so bad. I was going to do a counterpoint, and this is my counterpoint. It's Christmas Eve and these shoes are just her side. But at least you don't hear that goddamn thing ever.
Yeah, but again, like, it doesn't. It may as well not exist. So I can memory hole it for most of the year.
But yeah, he's right.
Yes.
Like, at least Christmas Shoes is kind of taking a back seat in the Christmas song oeuvre. Thank God for that. Okay, I have to levy a point on this, don't I? Yeah, Polar Express is one that I've come back around to every 3 to 5 years, just like. Maybe my opinion on this will be different this time.
Maybe it'll be better this time. No.
And I'm starting to wonder now if am I going to hit a certain age where all of a sudden I'm nostalgic for this movie? So far, it hasn't happened yet, and I don't know if it's ever going to. And yeah, like, I feel about this kind of the way that I feel about, like, you know, those treacly children's books that we talked about earlier. Like, this is a movie for my mom to be nostalgic about spending Christmas with little tiny little me, and that's fine. I don't necessarily feel the same way about it yet. So for what it is, the tech demo stuff, the adventure-y train sequences are fun. The abandoned North Pole warehouse settings are interesting and creepy. I like that stuff. The kids I could do without. And at that point, why am I watching this?
Because you host a Christmas movie podcast.
I know, this is my curse.
I'm thinking about this now when we talk about, like, things being nostalgia at us, but, like, then again, like, A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, like, actually good.
I mean, it's the same thing. It's like when did Gene Shepard write that book? In the 70s?
That was 60s or 70s, yeah.
Okay. The point I'm getting at is, like, A Christmas Story is an 80s film based on a 60s book about 40s, nostalgia for the 40s. And then The Polar Express is a 2000s movie based on an 80s book about nostalgia for the 50s. So it's kind of the same thing?
But Christmas Story is so much more eminently relatable.
And it's more fun
because
as
everybody
a
was
movie.
A kid. Say
it's
what?
It's more fun as a movie, too.
Well, it's more fun as a movie, of course. It's, you know, better written, better paced, but even at its core, the themes that it addresses and what it gets at and, like, that feeling of Christmas as a little kid is way more relatable than this, which is, as Joe has said many times, is really more intended for adults reflecting back on being a kid, but in a different way. I don't know.
I mean,
Christmas Story has that absolute edge of cynicism, which is to its ultimate aid, I think, and is amazing. It's such a good movie. I can't believe that I wasn't able to be on that episode.
We may just have to
do another Christmas Story episode because I need to gush about that movie too.
And I want to also compare it to Christmas Vacation, which is the same thing, which is like how much of us like Christmas Vacation is just because it came out when we were like 4 years old, basically. I think I was 4 when it came out. So, I mean, it was just one of those things that I watched constantly when I was like 8 or 9, you know, more or less, you know?
Oh yeah, 100%. That's us, and I feel like a lot of kids feel that way about Elf. You know?
Oh my goodness, the mind boggles. But, I guess I don't want to yuck anybody's.
Yeah,
yum.
And I don't want to be like, you know, RIP to your ground, but I'm different. But I do feel like with Christmas Vacation, it's like the thing it's kind of pulling at is just the sense of, for better or worse, being around your fucking family at holidays.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that does feel more relatable. And yeah, Christmas Story with just a general, like, the feeling of being a kid and trying to not lose your mind before Christmas, that's more relatable than, like, doubting Santa Claus. Which, if you didn't...
Who struggled with this when they were little? Like, I mean, it was a bit of a disappointment for, like, half a moment, but then I got a Super NES that same Christmas. So it's like, all right. Okay.
It's like, all right, so you bought this from a store, not the guy at the North Pole. Okay, cool, cool, cool. So now I know to ask you for the games.
Yes. So now I've got a direct line. I know exactly how this works. Now we can get down to brass tacks.
Yeah, like, I remember. I felt bad for about a day, and then everybody just kind of agreed to maintain the kayfabe, and we all still have fun, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of just what growing up and learning about Santa Claus means is like, okay, now that I know that, I can move on and enjoy other parts of Christmas, you know?
I think that's probably the part of the problem with this movie's message is it makes out this belief to be like this big sacred cow when it's not really that big of a deal to literally anybody because everybody who's over the age of 12 knows what the deal is.
And
right?
The older you are still believing in it, the more you're going to spend on therapy.
And like, yeah, it was cool, but you were also 6 years old, you know?
Yeah, and your parents lied to you is always the lesson of Santa Claus.
Yeah, your parents played a very specific cultural prank on you for the first 7 years of your life.
It could be worse. Your parents couldn't convince you that Hogwarts is a real place.
Didn't somebody do that?
Yes.
Isn't that what you were saying?
Yes.
Oh my god, that's right. That's right. Somebody did that.
Ugh.
Unfathomable. That's right. I forgot all about that.
So can we just say, just for the sake of simplicity's sake, can we just say a one for this?
Yeah, I want to say one. Like,
one is fine.
It's not actively bad. It's just got the misfortune of coming out too early for the technology to really make it pop, and it's kind of a victim of its own source material. So in all that, yeah, it's fine. It's not actively bad.
I was going to say something else now.
A lot of my complaints are more about like the background to it, like the making of it. You know, it's like it doesn't really change the quality too much of whether they had a kid do mocap or whether they had Tom Hanks in a fucking funhouse doing the mocap. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the question is just like, well, why did you do that? You know? But in the end result, it's like it's still there's a kid running around on the screen for whatever, and it's like, I mean, I've seen a lot worse. We've seen a lot better. I did enjoy parts of it. So yeah.
So yeah, that's, I think that's going to do it. We're going to stamp that score as a +4, +1 for the Polar Express. So that train came and went around the track and it's time to hop off. And thank you, Brad.
You're welcome.
Time to hop off and move on to our next huge embarrassing failure.
We absolutely have to call our shot, especially after we talked so much about nostalgia bait and things being relatable. So if you're unaware, there's this movie coming out on HBO Max, tomorrow?
It's very
soon. Isn't it supposed to come out like the day after Thanksgiving or something?
Yes, something like that.
Early December. So this movie is called the 8-Bit Christmas.
Yeah, as of this recording, we're releasing this episode on Thanksgiving Day. It comes out tomorrow.
If you're unaware, I envy you. Maybe. They've already started billing it as a Christmas story for millennials, which already...
Millennials have a Christmas story. It's called A Christmas Story.
Yeah, excuse me. I'm going to go barf real quick. All right, I'm back.
So, yeah, that will be our next episode. I mean, it's going to be video game chat, the episode.
Yeah, so prepare yourselves.
Go look at a trailer. I assume we'll put it in, maybe we'll put it in the show notes.
I will definitely put that in the show notes.
So we're going to call our shot for that.
8-Bit Christmas, starring Neil Patrick Harris. Get ready for that, everybody. Well, friends, thank you for listening to this episode of Christmas Creeps. We went into some very deep places for us as a podcast tonight, and I hope you enjoyed yourselves listening to this. If you did enjoy it, please, by all means, go and give us a star rating on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen and rate podcasts. Leave us a review to let us know how we're doing. And hey, tell a friend about the show, because the holidays are coming, and we know everybody's looking for Christmas podcasts. So tell them about Christmas Creeps.
Thank you so much for listening. We know you have a lot of choice out there. There's so much media that even if you lived for hundreds of times your own lifetime, you'd only scratch the surface of it. So we really do appreciate you listening. Can't thank you enough.
That makes me think that like our only listeners are vampires who've just listened to every other podcast out there.
We can't disprove it.
No. If you're a vampire out there, let us know.
Time traveler, loopers, and vampires.
If you want to send us anything, email those things to us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at Christmas Creeps on Twitter. That's kind of our preferred method of communication with our listeners. We're on Facebook and Instagram. We don't use it that much, but if you want to follow us on there, I'm not going to tell you not to. Anything else you want to promote before we get going?
I'm good.
I'm sad that my harmonica case does not have my harmonica in it, so now I gotta find where my harmonica is, and hopefully I find it by next episode.
You have to learn an NES song on harmonica to play for us for 8-Bit Christmas.
Learn the moon theme from DuckTales.
Ooh, that's a good one. Learn the main theme or Balloon Trip from Balloon Fight.
I'm just gonna do the Bubble Bobble thing theme song and just play it the entire podcast.
Oh my god! Well, for Christmas creeps, everybody. Gosh. I'm Joseph Wade.
From Bradford.
I'm Johnny Five, the human robot.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.